This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. I want to do this thing. So, what's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne.
Scoop.
And Jonathan Dornbush.
Scoop.
And we have a great show for you this week. We're going to be checking in with the listeners all episode long this week. A little bit of a slower news week, so we've got all listener mail this week. We're going to be talking about the hardest games we've ever beaten. We've got a listener who needs some recommendations on cooperative games.
Oh, boy.
But first, Corey Adams writes in. He emailed us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com, just like you, Cam. And he says, "Hey, Omega Cops, hope all is well at Camp Goose. I've been a huge fan of the show for years, but this is my first time sending an email. So I'm considering trying out the remake for Shadow of the Colossus, out this week. I never played it before, and I really have no excuse as to why not. I just never did, even after all the critical acclaim. Might just be the best game I never played." Oh, cool. Which brings me to my question. What's the best game you guys have never played?
Oh, man.
So many. I had never played Shadow. I'm playing through it for the first time.
This is your first time playing that?
Yeah. In a game that's in our top 20 games of all time that you never played or something like that?
Mm. I mean, there were dozens. I was mostly a Genesis kid growing up. And so I've caught up on, like, Super Metroid's now my favorite game of all time. But many of those SNES classics, you know, I didn't play Chrono Trigger until a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm slowly closing off those gaps. Come back to me. I'll think about what it remains my most unplayed.
Well, the best game I've never played may shock you.
Mm-hmm. Kid Nicky, Radical Ninja?
No, I played that one.
Okay.
Of course.
No, mine would probably be Mario Galaxy 2.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
That is a good
game.
We give it a 10.
I know. It's a 10 from IGN. It came out at a time when I just hated the Wii so much. I was so over the Wii and the Wiimote, and I was over it.
Mine is Jared Petty's favorite game of all time.
Which is, wait.
You guys know this.
Jared Petty's favorite game.
You can ask me 20.
Oh, Adventure?
No, I've played Adventure.
Yeah.
Sid Meier's Pirates.
Oh, that's right.
And I've never played any Civ.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
And I know those games are lauded, and there's an expansion out, the Dan just reviewed, and I was like, oh, these games look really cool.
Yeah.
But I've never had that, you know, that high-end PC to play them.
Every time I've watched gameplay, I'm like, that seems like something I would love to do. And then, it just completely passes me by.
Yep.
Yeah.
I feel like of everything said, Pirates, Civ, Shadow of the Colossus, those are all on like my two playlist and just haven't.
I've never played Monkey Island either.
Any Monkey Island?
No.
Oh, wow.
Even when
two matter, right?
They re-released
the first two are the good ones.
Yeah. They re-released the first two on Xbox Live Arcade last gen.
Telltale made
they're really great.
Well,
that was a separate thing.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So that's some people's favorite game ever. Grim Fandango, never played that.
They also just remastered that one. They're making it so easy for you to play these
games.
There's
a run button too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just play those games with guides, you know. You'll get the atmosphere and the story.
Yeah, I think that's what they're really
about. I wonder if there's guides from the time that would be fun to buy and play along with.
Those adventure games, since they have such hardcore fan bases, there's the exact perfect thing for you where, I wish I could plug the website because I can't remember the name, but there's a website that does a cascading level of hints.
Oh, I love that.
Like, it gives you, like, a super general hint and a slightly more specific one, and then it's like, here's the answer. So it's like, it's perfect for how much help you want. I'm having a hard time because I've closed, like, I'd never played a lot of the classic computer RPGs, but then a couple years ago I played through Planescape Torment and played through Baldur's Gate.
I was going to say, but I've never played Baldur's Gate 1 or 2.
Yeah, like Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, arguably the greatest Western RPGs of all time. 2, certainly. Greatest city in a video game ever.
Sometimes you have a good excuse. Like, I've just never been a PC gamer. Yeah. I didn't have a PC growing up. So.
It's usually tied to gaps in, like, platforms, right? Like, me not getting an SNES till later.
Or, for example, just a genre. Like, I've never played a Gran Turismo just because I don't care about cars.
Okay. Yeah.
There's that too.
Yeah, I mean, having not grown up with, like, a good PC for gaming thing, even something like WoW, I have never even tried WoW.
I've never played WoW.
Yeah. I've never played WoW.
World of Warcraft is
but
so
I play Hearthstone every day.
I would so love to get, like, a contemporary opinion of World of Warcraft 10 years later because I think that game's still really good, but I have nostalgic feelings tied up.
A contemporary opinion, like a first-time player or just...
Well, and they are doing, like, the legacy server sort of thing, right? Aren't they?
Yeah.
They officially announced that.
Well, and they also, the interesting thing is they, you know, whatever expansion it was, Cataclysm redid the World of Warcraft, you know, it was starting to feel old, like the original areas, the earliest areas in the game, like the level 1 to 10 areas. And so they used this expansion, Cataclysm, as an excuse to reboot the game world. But now... That content's some of the oldest content in the game because they've gone back and touched up the other stuff since then.
Yeah, you're not selling me on WoW right now, but it is interesting.
Well, I just wonder, like, the new stuff is now, like, the oldest stuff, and it's all flipped around, so.
Yeah. I looked at lists of, like, the best rated games all time on Metacritic. But you've played, you know, Half-Life 2, the GTAs.
I mean, I don't know how beloved they are.
San Andreas.
What about PlayStation 1 era games?
You haven't played San Andreas? No.
A notable gap in my knowledge are the PS1, like the Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Never played those, but I don't know how much people love them.
Yeah. Like Crash Bandicoot. Like, I played those, but not intense.
I never owned a Crash game. I've only toyed around with them for a few minutes.
Yeah. The Tomb Raiders 1, 2, and 3, like, they were really important at the time.
Yeah.
But it's probably not a game you want to play today.
I feel like they don't hold up as well,
Not when you've got the two new Tomb Raiders that are awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never grew up with any of the Mega Man games, Mega Man 1 through 6, so I've only toyed around with them a little in the office. I never had the NES Castlevanias.
I think I played 2 and 3.
Those are the ones.
Yeah.
And those are the ones I was told. Have played Castlevania now?
I mean, like, it's the nature of my job. Like, that stuff I've poked around with on, you know, NES Classics and stuff, but they're not, I've never actually sat down to, like, play Castlevania on the NES.
And I know you never played Hunza's Adventure Island 2.
well, I don't know if I've never played that one. We were just talking about that.
I think it's an excellent game.
Adventure Island 2.
Everybody should try. It's very accessible and fun. You ride dinosaurs in it.
What about the Medieval Madness pinball table?
Mm-hmm. Medieval Madness. I've seen it a million times, so I must have played it. Yeah.
AKA, it's the greatest pinball table ever made.
It's interesting if you go by.
I completely agree.
So it's interesting actually to go by platform. So, like, Sam, what's a known great NES game that you've never played?
With that. But, like, on Super Nintendo, like, I played Ogre Battle now. I always wanted to play that. I have that now. It's hard.
Yeah.
There's games that are that I sought after because I was a collector for so long. But here's the thing. PlayStation 1, Dreamcast, I haven't played anything on those systems.
Okay. Yeah.
Symphony of the Night, Rap with the Rapper, that's all I've played. Oh. No, those are the ones.
He has played those. Those are the ones he has
played. Nobody's ever, like, coming at me with, like, a jewel case, like, you gotta play this PS1 game. Well, why doesn't that happen?
So many of the...
Because they don't age as well.
The weird polygonal graphic focus didn't... It didn't last in the same way that I think Mario 3... Like, Super Mario 64, there is a sort of the aesthetic of it, I think, holds up in a way that some of the early PlayStation games don't hold up.
I finally...
I've never played Klonoa.
Yeah.
That's good, right?
I found a good one for myself.
Yeah.
I've only played Dragon Quest 8 or whatever the 3D cel-shaded one. I've never played any of the other Dragon Quest games. And I've never played Final Fantasy 4. I played 1 through 3 and 5 through 9, but I didn't play 4 I played an hour of 10.
It's weird you played 5.
5's great.
My Final Fantasy history is weird. So I played the remakes on DS of, like, 3 and 4, I think.
They're so ugly.
But they were still fun to play.
Yeah.
But I've never played through 6 or 7 8 or 9.
Oh,
boy. I've maybe played the first hour of each of those.
So out of everything we said, is there a game that we all haven't played that we all agreed on that we hadn't played?
No.
That we could play for a Game Scoop Club?
That would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, it might be
what
hard to
Civ?
Come up
you
with.
You guys all played Civ?
Yeah.
What about something that's just like phenomenally popular, like League of Legends?
I've never played PUBG.
Never.
I've never played PUBG.
I played
one
man.
Game.
Jonathan, you ruined it.
I know. I'm sorry. I'll leave.
What, but have you played League of Legends?
No.
Okay.
I played Dota.
I have not played
League. So none of us have played League of Legends.
I'm great at League of Legends.
No, you're not.
You never stop talking about it.
League of Legends. Play League?
Yeah, we'll play League of Legends.
Can we stream it on the GameScoop channel?
We need one
we
more.
Can.
Here's what we need. We need one more person that hasn't played because it's a 5-player game.
Oh,
and we all play our first game of League of Legends and we don't. Let's agree
let's
to not.
Also not read about it first.
Carrie's going to be here on Friday. I wonder if she's played League.
But I don't know. Does it count? Like, I've played MOBAs. I've just never played League.
Well, it'll be interesting because I've never even played a MOBA.
Okay.
So you're the team captain because you've played MOBAs before.
I know what jungling is.
Well, viewers, no listeners, let us know if you
I think it's pronounced youngling.
A good idea for us to play League of Legends in a live stream for the first time.
I kind of want to do that.
Also, here's hoping that Nintendo re-releases Super Mario Galaxy 2 on the Switch because then I would finally play it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is Zach.
And Captain Toad. Damon, I have a question for you.
Yes, Justin.
I have a question for you.
This is Justin.
How the tables have
Justin
turned.
Justin writes from San Francisco, California.
That's what my question's about. You often say, I've been a long-time reader of the show. This is my first time writing in. Do you have a preference for, are you more likely to choose a question if they're like, I've never written into you before?
No, I don't think so because, we always hear from Big Tony style. Pretty often. No, I'm just looking for like good topics.
Okay,
so good topics for the show.
So you don't have any sort of like long-time reader preference. This guy's been reading a long time. So.
Well, if they say they've been reading for a long time, obviously.
And you give special preference to AOL.com addresses because those are hilarious. Sure.
Yes, exactly. If you have an AOL.com
Hotmail
email address, like what the heck? This guy's got to be. A good time.
That's impressive.
This is Zach. He says, hope you and the Game Scoop crew are doing well. Recently, I have beaten Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
Wow.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I recently beat it as well.
Really interesting. That game
within
is not
the last
called,
years.
That game is not called The Legend of Zelda 2.
No.
This is a game that I had tried many times over the years, but always found the game frustrating and difficult. I would always get to the second castle before I would die too many times, get sent to the beginning area, and quit.
Yeah, you have to get all through the caves again. So
finally, I sat down with a guide, determined to finish the game. It was the only Zelda I had not beaten, CDI excluded, and I really wanted to complete my collection. I was ecstatic when I finally beat it. It is by far the hardest game I have completed, and I'm proud and glad I did it. My question to you is, what game is your greatest accomplishment, or are you most proud of beating?
I'll just take that one.
Yeah. Oh, it's Zelda 2?
Yeah, the final boss is so cool. But we talked about this on Game Scoop. I remember when I was playing it. I think I had Jared coaching me.
Yeah.
But that game is really, really difficult. But you save states now, and it makes it possible. But it's still hard.
Yeah. But that's on the NES Classic, Zelda 2?
Of course.
You can play that, yeah. If you want to play it more. Accurate.
It's on 3DS, the eShop, and has a really nice
okay.
Or
that's how I played it. I just played on that.
I think for me, probably it's not the most difficult because of how brutal it was, but just endurance wise, the Rock Band 2 Endless Setlist.
Oh, wow.
Like that, because that thing is like, I think 11 hours or
something. Isn't that the thing where you can't pause?
I did it with my cousin.
You can't fail any songs and you can't pause.
It's really fun. Yeah.
So you have to play it for 11 hours straight?
I think it's
without
like,
failing?
Yep.
Yeah.
What? That's crazy.
I played too
crazy.
Much Rock Band, so I got, like, I was pretty good at it, but I could play almost everything on expert, but we bumped it down to hard just because endurance wise.
Yeah.
We could not get through.
No, you could do it on easy, though.
We could, but we wanted to give ourselves
it's really boring.
There's an achievement for that. And we have it on a list. I wrote a feature several years ago on like the hardest, silliest achievements ever made. And that's how I know all about it. And I know that the way to cheese it, first of all, you can't cheese it. You have to play through for 11 hours. But what some people do is play the bass line. And then there's a song that has no bass line like 4 or 5 hours in for like 60 seconds. So that's people's chance to run and pee.
Yeah. We also, it was my cousin and I playing, but my other cousin was sort of our alternate for the first like half of it because we started like middle of the day and just played into the night.
I remember planning ours out really carefully. We had a party, had a bunch of people over that were playing Rock Band, 20 people, and you just switch people in.
That's smart.
And it was really fun.
Yeah.
It was a really fun night. But then by the end of it, people were so drunk that like it was really hard to get through the last couple because I think it was sequenced by difficulty.
Yes. And two probably has the hardest like end tier. Mm-hmm. Just like the last 5 or 6 songs of that game are so difficult.
Yeah. They're long.
Yes.
Like High Tide, Green Grass.
Yes. Yeah. That one, yeah, that one's actually one, but that the end of one is also super tough. Yeah.
There's Monster Jams in two, though, for sure.
Yeah, there's a couple. I forget the names, but there's a few that are just absolutely brutal.
Sometimes I hear songs on like a radio or like streaming or something when I'm at a place. I'm like, I only know that from Rock Band.
Because of Rock Band.
Yeah, there's so many songs that I discovered through Rock Band.
Same.
Yeah.
That was like my music education for a couple years. Mm-hmm. Like, it was awesome. Exploring my music tastes. Yeah.
Well, that's really impressive, Jonathan. I was going to say, I'd be Super Meat Boy, but that's way more impressive.
Yeah, Meat Boy.
You beat Super Meat Boy?
Oh, yeah. Well, like back when it first came out, yeah.
Meat Boy might be one of mine.
It's definitely one of the hardest ones.
I generally don't like to be particularly challenged by my game. I'm not the kind of person that, you know, will fail and fail and fail and try again. I'm mostly playing games to have a good time and relax. When I was in high school, I was very, very good at Super Meat Boy. And at my peak, I was 9th in the world.
There you go. Oh.
No, not Super Meat Boy. Goodness gracious. Wow. Super Monkey Ball.
Oh,
that's a very different game.
Yeah, that's
very different.
Sorry.
Game. Oh, yeah. Didn't you used to compete?
It's an alternate history.
Yeah, I used to compete for time on Super Monkey Ball, and me and some of my friends. So here's what happened. This is like a top 10 nerdy Justin story.
Good. I love it.
We had a spreadsheet of our times in Super Monkey Ball per level, like our time in level 1, our time in level 2, and it was color-coded so that if you had the slowest time in the level, yours was pink. You had the pink score. And so you didn't want to have the pink score in any level. And so through us competing with each other, me and my three friends, we also rose up through the global leaderboards until all of us, like these four kids from Iowa, were like very, very good at Super Monkey Ball.
Well, I'm surprised that Super Monkey Ball had global leaderboards.
Some of it was on the honor system. And if you started breaking in, like if you started having like world record times on, you know, multiple stages, they might start to ask for, you know, look, you need to photograph it. Because at the time, people had like potato cameras on their phone. Like there was no way to really get good proof. There were no easy like capture kits. But if you started really competing at a very high level, you had to start proving your times and proving your
That's
scores. And we would warm up. Like, there's master levels in that game that most people never see. They're hard to unlock, very hard to beat. And that was just our warm-up, was to, like, run through those. It's by far the game that I was best at in the world at my peak.
Sam, did you see that Billy Mitchell lost a couple of his Donkey Kong world records?
Yeah. So what happened?
Scandal.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Is that he submitted games that were clearly recorded on ROMs.
Like, well, not clearly at the time, but they proved they were. Now
I guess I should say not clearly. the way that a ROMs build a game on your screen is different than how arcade board does.
Yeah, and if
which is shocking because I don't know why that.
I don't know why either.
So if you slow it down by frame, like Donkey Kong pops in, then a ladder, and then like everything, but you would never see that. It's a blink of an eye. And so the way that they figured it out was that, you know, TVs build from right to left. And this was like popping in the stuff. So like he probably got the scores, or maybe he didn't. But there's no way to tell because you're not supposed to use a ROM. Because
ROM could be slowing down the game and then played back at a faster speed. You don't know what the whole thing.
You can't verify that he wasn't using
ROM.
Tools.
Everything a game board uses ROM. Yeah, this is MAME that uses it's an emulator playing a ROM.
Yeah. And then that led me down this Billy Mitchell rabbit hole where, like, he's been smoking mirrors for, like, so undoubtedly an incredible gamer. But, like, his world record pace is, like, he set a world record, but he did it in a separate room from where the crowd was, and no one could see him play.
No witness.
And it's like, you're not a magician, dude. Like,
it makes you think, like, all these should be in front of people.
Yeah.
And
there's
an element to performance we expect in sports, and we expect it in game playing for esports. And for some reason, it's just enough to send in a tape for Twin Galaxies arcade scoring, which I think is wrong.
Records set at the actual Olympics aren't done behind like a wall and like, oh, that guy ran really fast. Trust me.
Trust me.
So you actually have to make, you know, a tape or a recording of you going in and showing the connections on your game board and then like showing the machine setup and like, then doing your score run.
Unbroken.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like set up a time of year, go to a place and do your score runs.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
people are nuts.
There is still one accomplishment I'm looking forward to achieving someday, hopefully in the not too distant future. I still haven't beaten Spelunky, even though I play it a lot and I do the daily challenge every day, but I've never actually beaten the last boss.
Actually, that's not true.
I beat Olmec one time, got him in the lava, but then before I could make the exit, I got killed by a bat.
Dude, bats.
That's as far as I've gotten.
Marty and I were just talking about writing a hate feature on how much we hate video game bats.
Yeah.
They suck in Stardew Valley.
They're stuck in everything.
They stuck in Zelda? Castlevania.
Mario Kart. Zelda. Mario Kart. When are they in Mario Kart?
In the Wario's Gold Mine, they come at you.
Mm. That's scary.
They suck in Pokemon. They're terrible universally.
What? Zubat? No, everyone loves Zubat. No one loves Zubat.
Woobat, Zubat.
All right, this is Kevin from Romford, Essex. And he says, a jolly good scoop to you all from merry old England.
Jolly good.
After being a gamer for over 25 years, last year I found out what can now only be described as my favorite game, Overcooked.
Oh, nice. Yes.
I am lucky enough to be able to afford an Xbox One X and a 4K HDR TV. But Overcooked is now my favorite game, as it is the very first time I got to share a gaming experience with my wife.
Aww.
The controls and concept are so simple. We 100%ed the game after a few weekends and had an awesome time doing so. As much as I adored GTA V, the Metal Gear Solid series, Inside and Limbo and many others, Overcooked now reigns supreme. My wife played some of the classic 8 and 16-bit console games growing up, but was never really into them. Here comes my dilemma and question. After Overcooked, we were keen to try other games together. My initial thought was Portal 2. However, having never used the modern twin analog stick setup, the system is just too alien to her, and she immediately disliked the game. We've tried simple platform co-op games like such as Lovers in a Dangerous Spacetime and Spelunky, but the gameplay and style haven't appealed. Could you suggest any first-person games that have an engaging enough story to convince her to persevere with the twin sticks, or other two-player co-op games that could suit?
I would not recommend a first-person game to a gamer.
He wants to get her acclimated.
He wants to be able to play something a little bit more sophisticated than like an Overcooked.
Yeah.
I acclimated my wife to twin-stick controls with Geometry Wars.
That's interesting. Mm. I don't know if that sort of like Twitch arcade gameplay would appeal to her.
And it's not a co-op game. I'm just saying, like, in regards to someone that like that control style is alien to you, that's like a fairly easier way to wrap your head around it than like picking up an FPS.
I assume the thing in terms of first person he wants her to acclimate to is the idea of like moving while controlling the camera simultaneously. Yeah. And I feel like something that's more of a walking simulator, but something like
that's why
Gone Home.
I was going to suggest Gone Home.
Oh yeah, I played that with my wife. Really like
Firewatch. Also, it's a little more.
I was also going to suggest Firewatch. Yeah, but Gone Home is great for a first-person game where you move around in space.
One person's playing that game.
Yeah, but he's trying to teach. This is two different questions.
Okay.
First-person games that have an engaging enough story to convince her to persevere with the twin sticks, or other two-player co-op games that could suit us.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about other like zany co-op style.
Well, games. How did you guys get into shooters? Doom.
Yeah.
Well, no,
I just played Halo.
It was like Perfect Dark for me. Yeah, that's only one. There's only one analog stick.
Perfect Dark. That was.
I did, but no, I wouldn't say there was a shooter that I was hooked on before Perfect Dark.
GoldenEye was the first shooter that I was both hooked on. Imagine.
Maybe that's a necessary step now.
Yeah.
You have to play the one analog stick.
One possible, and then everything else.
Well, and then I immediately went to Halo and was like, "This is much easier."
More
co-op. I feel like they had a little renaissance.
You don't need. What's the specific question? One more time. Okay. Is it just first-person shooter games that are easy to play or engaging?
He doesn't even say shooters. First-person games that have an engaging enough story to convince her to keep going with to learning her analog sticks. Or another two-player game that would suit them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought a walking simulator, Gone Home.
Gone Home, Firewatch, Tacoma, all on Xbox One.
Yeah. I don't know. Is What Remains of Edith Finch good? I don't know.
Yeah. Did that come to Xbox also?
Oh, maybe it's not. There's no way to find that out. Unless you go to the store.
Because it was a giant sparrow.
Yeah.
But
it's surprising that...
Unfinished Swan was a good one.
Yeah,
that's also PS4.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. Lovers in a Dangerous Spacetime didn't appeal to her, because I thought that's the whole idea, is that it's supposed to be a friendly cooperative game. The Witness.
Witness could be good.
Yeah.
Witness could be good.
It's so pretty, too. The Witness. I really like playing that and just looking around, and you don't need to like action go around. You can just look around the
You
island.
Can just explore that.
Like I'm saying, you don't need to like use a trigger also. You're just like kind of like, this is amazing looking, and sometimes you do a puzzle.
Is that game 1 year old or 2 years old? It came out in January.
2 years old now.
Because it's been on my mind, and I think it's on my mind just because it came out at this time of year.
Anyway,
just remembering how much I loved it, and really any excuse to have more people play that game is good enough for me.
Yeah.
Other fun co-op though, like it's a much simpler thing, but just the Lego games.
Sure.
Like the best of the Lego games are really. I've been playing through Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 with my girlfriend, and she like knows games but isn't like super deep, like could not jump into Halo and perfect it, but she's been having a really fun time, and I do too.
We played the Lego games together, my wife and I. I kind of forgot.
Yeah, not first person, but
maybe we should pick a co-op
game. In terms of just a co-op game.
Another good cooperative choice for the Xbox could be Zoo Tycoon.
Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to be really good. And you could play through the whole game as a cooperative experience.
That's cool. Like you both are building parts of the
zoo. Yeah, building up your zoo together, and it's like that's really relaxed. Cool. There's not like a new conflict.
New Picross on Switch has a two-player mode. Where but you're both just building it.
If you have a Switch,
so buy a Switch.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good reminder. Switch I have not finished Picross.
Yeah, I put it down too. I was obsessed with it. You and I both were.
Yeah.
And then I put it down for a while, and when I picked it back up, it was like it was not like riding a bike. I couldn't even begin. It's just numbers, and I'm like, Picross? I don't even know where to start.
I got through the main challenges, but then I didn't go to super, mega Picross or whatever it is.
You know what game taught all of my non-gamer friends to play contemporary games was Mario Party. Because all of the mini games have a various amount of camera manipulation, or sometimes they're first person, sometimes they're not. And you're holding a pretty complicated controller, you know, through the Wii. And it was like, I remember a lot of people learned how to play games. And we moved on to Mario Kart from that, you know, which is a big jump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting talking about the N64 controller and the one analog stick there, because when they inevitably want to do an N64 classic, they do have a problem on their hands with what to do with their controller situation.
Yeah.
Because like the NES and Super Nintendo controllers have aged. They're much more common today.
What's wrong with
people using emulators?
You just ignore the left side of it.
Yeah.
You can't, though.
Yeah.
Just leave it there. I mean, you just hold the right side.
Yeah, my original thought was they would turn it into a two-stick controller and turn the yellow buttons into a C-stick.
Yeah,
but other games use those buttons as buttons.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you can't.
So they kind of have a problem on their hands.
Yeah, you're
They're probably thinking about that right now in Kyoto. Meanwhile, in Kyoto, Shigeru Miyamoto's like, what to do with this darn controller?
I think
controller?
If you hold that controller and ignore that third prong, it's just like any other controller.
Yeah.
Right?
Your hands are just a little offset, but yeah.
It's just a PlayStation controller.
You hold it in the middle. In the middle for the analog stick there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just holding like that. I never reached across.
It's dumb, but like you can play all the games that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You lose the left trigger. I guess you still have the Z trigger.
Yeah, yeah, you have two triggers. I mean, we all get used to that. It's just we think when you think back on first-person shooters, it's totally crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, you know, Mario 64 like plays completely normal that way. You're just running and jumping.
Remember Mario 64 on the DS with the thumb nub?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I actually never played it. I know it was like the launch title.
You
for
could
the
use it
DS.
To like run with that.
I think maybe I've brought this up on Scoop before, but I'm really fascinated by alternate versions or superior versions of games that are trapped on like weird, like Castlevania Symphony of the Night had extra content in the Sega Saturn version that didn't come out anywhere else.
Yeah, people
and nobody
that.
Played the Sega Saturn version. And Mario 64 had what 20 or 30 new stars
in the DS version.
Mm-hmm. Like it's one
and
of the
Mario.
Most it's one of the most beloved games of all time, and it has more stars, more content on some platform that's like an inferior way to play it.
Well, and even more recently, the best version of Wind Waker is just now trapped on the Wii U, unless they port that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Wind Waker is my personal favorite Zelda game, and I can't play the best version
of it. But imagine if
that
had, another dungeon.
Yeah.
Or the color dungeons in Link's Awakening, although we do mostly get that version of the game now.
And then Mario 3 had cards for Game Boy Advance that you could scan in.
Oh, with the e-reader.
Mario 3 levels.
Wow.
I think we just came up with a feature.
Yeah, we did. Live Best feature, versions. Live feature writing.
I just like Mario 3.
Didn't Metal Gear Solid have like a hologram mission expansion?
Yes, but that was a standalone
VR missions.
That was like That was like DLC before DLC was a thing. It was like $20
round of VR set.
Yeah. My friends and I played through all those in college.
IGN, I know we got. I know you're looking down.
Yep.
Moving on.
Yep.
I just want to emphasize again how crazy it is that we named Super Mario Brothers 3 the greatest game of all time, best game ever made, and there's more levels for it that are trapped on some device that no one has ever seen or actually played. I don't even know what those levels look like. I want to look them up on YouTube now.
I'm sure Nintendo will figure out a way to sell those levels to us again one day. This is Anwar Virgil in the Netherlands.
That's a really cool name.
What's up?
I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He says, hey, Damon and the Scoopers, why do you think the Vita failed and Switch is already a big hit? I only say failed because I wanted the Vita to be more than it was. I wanted a device like the Switch that interacted with my PS4 console and take on the road with me. I bought a Switch last month and I instantly fell in love with it. I've been playing the usual suspects, Mario, Zelda, Oxenfree, and Darkest Dungeon. So the Vita did not have Zelda or Mario.
Yeah,
sure.
That's one of the big problems.
Yeah. Didn't have one of the greatest games ever made on it as a launch game.
Yep. I mean, there's so many reasons. It wasn't marketed as heavily as the Switch was.
Yeah, I think marketing and the way it was positioned. Like, I bought a Vita, but the way that system was marketed was you can have a home console in your pocket on the go, but it never was really one-to-one the way mm-hmm. they sort of implied beforehand. Yeah. And it was marketed towards a more hardcore demographic.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a system that you could plug into your TV and take on the go yeah. right out of the box.
Yes.
You know, there was an adapter you could buy later for that.
Yeah.
But that's what the Switch is, right out of the box. Nintendo took it onto late-night talk shows yeah. to show it off to everybody.
There is also the word-of-mouth thing of, like, you show someone a Switch and they instantly get it. That you show yeah. someone a Vita, they're like, oh, that looks like a PS1 game that I've yeah. played, or well, I think some PS2 games.
The Switch, the promise of the Switch, like, let's not discount the Joy-Con, you know, sliding in and out of the too? Console and the changing of the form factors. I think it was you. It was you.
It was
No.
I mean, it was you.
Who
I think
loves
it was
like the Joy-Con?
No, like when the Switch came out, yeah. I think it was like you and Josh Du and a few other people like tweeted out, like, we're waiting for our movie to start.
Oh, yeah.
You were just playing Switch. Mm. Like,
yeah.
there are these moments that look like television commercials, yeah. like the way that console marketed itself with like setting up a kickstand and playing it at a restaurant while you wait for your yeah. food to come. And these like yeah. the moments that almost feel staged, but it's just like that's the way that
it was genuine. Yeah. Playing snipper clips before dinner come. We're in yeah. the movie theater in Maybe the lobby and we're playing yeah. other like, games. Yeah.
The promise of that system actually being fulfilled in a way that didn't just turn out to be like marketing speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the Vita was like a secondary console. It wasn't Sony's primary console. There yeah. was the PlayStation, what?
That's really good.
3. Point. And then you could also get the supplementary, you know, piece of hardware, whereas the Switch is Nintendo's new, this is Nintendo's new console.
And I don't remember necessarily the months after it, but like the Vita launch had a ton of games, and Sony put a lot into that first wave of games. But after mm-hmm. that, I think it sort of slowed to a drip in the way that
yeah.
the Switch has had consistent support throughout its first year.
Yeah, it's true.
The Vita was expensive, I think, too, wasn't it? I don't recall.
I think it was $250.
I don't remember what it started at, but
in today's dollars, $250 it's like or $300.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah,
depending on like the size you bought, because there was like 4G version, Wi-Fi
yeah.
version.
Oh yeah, they did 4G at yeah. those points.
That OLED whatever. Screen.
I mean, that's good for Monster Hunter if you're yeah. in Japan, but
yeah.
here,
yeah.
It's just the software.
Yeah, I liked the Vita a lot, but I got it very late, and then I had about a year where I really enjoyed using it and catching up with all the games. But then the Switch came, and I was like, well. 3DS and Vita are going out to live on the farm at grandma's house.
I think the Vita is the first home or portable console I didn't buy since the Sega Saturn, maybe. Mm. I think I've had every single
since
one.
Since the Saturn. Wait, did you buy the Saturn?
No.
You didn't buy the Saturn, okay.
Played a lot of Luminas that first month or two.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's on the PSP?
Version. On Vita, too.
I didn't play the Vita yeah. version.
It's time for Luminas on Switch.
Yeah, that is. That's a really good point.
All right, this is Jordan from Pennsylvania. He says, I'm curious on your thoughts on whether or not I should get a PS4 Pro now or wait until E3 to see if PlayStation releases anything about price drops or even a next generation console. Mm. I own a 4K TV and an Xbox One X, but it saddens me that I'm not able to play some of the PlayStation exclusives in 4K like Shadow of the Colossus or Horizon Zero Dawn. Seeing the difference on my Xbox One X with a game like Assassin's Creed Origins really made me consider. So
yeah, don't buy one right now.
So he has an X.
Don't buy one right now.
Yeah, I would say there's no, like, I've been considering getting a Pro, but my PS4 runs well enough, and I've been enjoying how games look on it just fine. That I'm probably going to wait until the next holiday cycle when there will be bundles and sales widely. Like
yeah.
now, I don't feel is the time.
Mm. Well, I think he's interested in playing PS4 games in 4K right now. I think he's more worried about, like, are they going to announce a new console or a big price drop at E3?
Well, knowing that he owns an Xbox One X informs part of my decision of saying don't buy one, because the Xbox One X outclasses the PS4 Pro just as a product. It's significantly more powerful and is more impressive. The PS4 Pro is more of a half step. They're both half steps. But I guess PS4 Pro is almost more of like a quarter step. And yeah, I think E3 is a really good candidate to get a price drop or some sort of impressive bundle that if you do want to pick one up, that'll be a better time to pick one up. It's only a few months away.
That's true.
God of War is out soon.
Yes, God of War is out soon.
Yeah. Maybe you just borrow one from a friend to play God of War.
God of War will be very gorgeous. On yes,
it'll be amazing.
If you, I mean, if
I'm
you
not going to buy one, you know, like I can wait.
If he was some like Sony exclusive fan or Sony mega fan, then I'd say yeah, PS4 Pro, like upgrade. Yeah. But knowing that he's a multi-platform gamer, I think the Xbox One X is a more impressive product.
Yeah, I do think E3 2018 is too soon for Sony to be talking about the PlayStation 5.
Agreed. We are getting there though. It feels crazy, right?
Well. I don't know. So
there's some like Switch pressure to do some kind of. I know they don't want to do portables ever again, but I don't wonder what
there were over 6 years between the release of the PlayStation 3 and the announcement of the PlayStation 4.
Yeah,
and this E3 will only be 4.5 years since the release of the PlayStation 4, and I think we've been seeing generations have been getting longer and longer, not shorter and shorter, right?
So, well, and especially with the half steps, that muddies the water of what a generation will be going forward. Yeah. I don't feel this year's the year. I feel like 2019 is the year we may start to get teases.
Agreed.
But also with Xbox One and PS4, like those announcement conferences didn't happen at E3. Like they each held their own individual events. PS4 was like a February, I think, or something like that.
Good point.
Like they were at different points in the year than E3.
Yeah, I
just think, I mean, this is like a Justin's getting old moment, but the fact that we're even in the ballpark of new consoles, like in my mind, the PS4 and Xbox One are still new consoles, but they're like 4 years old. Yeah. Like,
I feel like they were just hitting their stride in the last.
It really trips me up, and I also feel like this generation hasn't had. I mean, maybe we're finding it with games like PUBG and games as a service, but like last gen. Like Assassin's Creed and like Gears of War were two like generation defining games in terms of like everything's going to be open world, or open world games can you know look and feel differently than like Grand Theft Auto, and then you know obviously what Gears did to third person shooters. And yeah. I don't know that this generation has had like, it doesn't feel like it has as much of an identity, like a separation point from old and new. It just feels like more of a continuation to me.
Well, I feel like there's been something to be said for at least like live service games being taking over, like PUBG or even something like Overwatch.
But it took us like 3 years to get there.
Yeah, Fortnite. Like that game is becoming so massive too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, don't look for any news about a PlayStation 5 at E3, but maybe a price drop. There'll definitely be some bundles, I think, coming with Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Other big PS4 games. This is Derek, and he says, "Dear Scooper Troopers, first time emailer, long time listener. I've been playing video games ever since I opened my Game Boy Color on Christmas Day and have made so many memories with video games in my life. However, lately, I've noticed myself losing enthusiasm and finding it harder to get into a game. For some reason, I just find it hard to be as excited as I used to be. How would you solve this? Am I just growing out of video games, or should I just take a break for a while? Looking forward to the group's insights." Derek.
I've found the same thing, and then I get super excited about a game and get back into it. You've got to find the right games that make you excited.
It happens to be every few years. It
might not be the old ones that you used to like.
Totally. Yeah, I get in those withdrawal periods where I'm just like, this is maybe a sequel to like a game I loved, and it's just not doing something for me. And then game after game I try, and then I just need sort of a break from them. And I still keep up with the industry, and I still was invested before I was working in it. But I would take a break for a little bit and then find something new, and it just grabbed me. BioShock was one of those games for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this fall's games, I can appreciate from just an artistic achievement standpoint, but just none of them appealed. Like, I tried Assassin's Creed and couldn't get into it, and, like, almost nothing from this fall, really, just...
Not Mario?
Well, I guess with the exception of Mario, I did enjoy it tremendously, although, you know, I do think it's not quite... I don't know, Mario Galaxy is better, in my opinion. But what I found was, I've talked about it on Scoop a couple times, I've been on a kick of strategy and simulation games. You know, I played a lot of Oxygen, not included, played a lot of RimWorld, now I'm playing Dwarf Fortress again, and like that's just, you know, Factorio, I'm back into that. So it's like, things just sort of go around in a cycle. Like, that's just what my flavor is right now. It's like, if you eat tacos every night, you're probably going to want to stop eating tacos for a little while. So just play some
things might surprise
games.
You. Like, I became obsessed with Pokemon Go. I loved it. My wife and I played it every night. We'd go on these huge walks and had so much fun. The more I look back in the last 5 years, like, I got more excited about that game than a lot of other games. And then I got less excited about Zelda at this time, and then Zelda was like so much better than I expected it to be, and then I got really into it. You know, so it's like, it's hard to anticipate games with hype levels that you may have had at one point, because some have disappointed you and some will surprise you, and you just have to definitely like kind of know your tastes, and maybe those tastes evolve and try new things.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sam's exactly right. I think games are so expensive and hard to make now that game developers are very risk averse generally. So even games that are very different, like an Assassin's Creed from, you know, I don't know, like a military shooter, like they're similar in the sense that like, they're just kind of similar in their look and feel and their playground style. We're going to pull you through this game world. And that's why something like The Witness, I just like latch onto as like, I've never played anything that feels like this.
Yeah.
And Zelda accomplished that for me too.
And like, not to just plug IGN content, but Chloe does a really awesome piece at the end of every month of like games you may have missed. And they vary so much in genre and style and tone and aesthetic. And that may be a good place. Like, if you feel you're looking at like the major games that you tend to look at and those games don't work for you, see something you may never have seen before, like get exposure to parts of of gaming that you never have tried.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, combining both those ideas, like companies will try to wear you out. They will try to use the same thing over and over again because it worked for them. And you see games like Destiny 2 where it's like, hey, like people kind of caught on. We're like, I don't really like this continuation of what I used to like. And, you know, things need to change. But then you have games like Madden, which, you know, are successful, or NBA every year. And they do the same thing. And people like those. And it's strange. And you can definitely stop liking a series that you've liked for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. So Derek, I would say this is maybe not a problem that needs to be solved. It's normal for your interest in gaming to wax and wane. And if it's waning at the moment, enjoy all of your free time.
Yeah, there's always pinball.
Yeah, there is always pinball.
Pinball's really fun. It's a good point. It's hard.
All right, here's what we're going to do next. It is February, so we were going to flip through a new issue of EGM.
Yeah, where's that at?
Well, I know. I left it at my desk, so and I know that Justin is going to have to bounce soon, so I don't know. If Justin, would you rather me go get the magazine, or would you rather participate in 20 questions first, and then we do the magazine?
I think I would rather be here for 20 questions. I don't want to see the group botch it without me again.
All right. Then that means it is time for Video Game 20 Questions. And we have some advice from a listener who was worried. He says he feels bad that you guys were struggling recently.
Yeah.
And Ian from Minneapolis.
So rude.
Ian from Minneapolis says on a recent episode, the panel lost the Video Game 20 Questions game when the answer happened to be a late Nintendo 64 game, Paper Mario.
Yeah.
What?
As a longtime fan of the show, I've always felt that the classic question, was it released after January 1st, 2000, to be a risky gamble? And this episode seemed to show why, with so many questions wasted trying to find the system. Let me cut straight to my hopefully...
Yeah, that's the end of the century, though.
Let me cut to my hopefully helpful suggestion for the GameScoop guessers. Ask if the system was released after January 1st, 2000, instead of the game.
What?
That's his advice.
What?
Because especially with Nintendo 64, you get games released in 2001, 2002, but you don't think of the Nintendo 64 that way. I mean, I take it or leave it. This is just Ian's advice from Minneapolis.
What's your little Smiley Damon answer going to be for PC?
Well, we'll find out. This week's suggestion comes from Justin.
It's not me. Don't worry.
Dwarf Fortress.
Yeah, goodness gracious.
Justin, not the Justin. Yes.
No, man, my fortress is going so poorly, guys. Yeah.
Was Justin also suggesting that question?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay.
The question is separate. Yeah. The question is just someone trying to provide some helpful advice. Right. So let the questioning begin.
Are we going to kick it off with that new line of questioning and see how it goes?
Does your character wear a hat?
No, we're not.
No.
Unequivocal no.
No, your character does not wear hats.
I think, okay. Is this a game that is on exclusive to a console?
No.
It's not Persona 5. You wear a hat.
Not always.
But you do sometimes.
Unequivocally, yeah.
Looking cool, Joker.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not exclusive to a console.
Mm-hmm.
Was this game, I don't care about the console thing, was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, listener.
See, one problem with this is that I don't know my console dates, so if I switch to that other
method, me too.
Well, I guess, like...
I mean, it's like PS2, GameCube, Xbox.
Yeah.
Are like 2003 or 2.
They're like those things. So it's not helping. I need to look those up before going
there. Yeah.
But that's the generation. And the point is, I don't necessarily agree with the reader's suggestion, but his point is that the 2008 splits the console generation.
It does. Yeah.
Which I get.
Okay. So was this released for the PS2, GameCube, Xbox generation of consoles?
No.
Was it released for the generation after that?
Which is what?
I don't know.
PS3, Wii, 360.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
That's pretty good. And it's multi-platform.
And it's, yeah.
Should we ask if it was released after the year 2000?
I got one, Jonathan.
Go ahead.
Was this game developed in Japan?
No.
Okay. Is this game a first-person shooter?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
They're so common in that generation.
Okay.
Does it have realistic graphics?
Yes.
Does it take place in World War II?
No.
So it's not the early Call of Duties. I guess I wish I wouldn't have asked that.
Does it have online multiplayer?
Yes. That's 10.
Okay.
So maybe it's We can ask about series and stuff because it could be like Battlefield.
Yeah, it could be Battlefield or Call of Duty, Modern Warfare.
Yeah, see, I wish I regret the World War II question because it still leaves many Call of Duties.
Or it could be just some first person shooter that was like a one off that we don't know.
Yeah, is this a franchise that's still active? Are they still making games now in this franchise?
Kind of.
Is it Medal of Honor? But that's all World War II. And what about Time Splitters?
I don't know enough about either of those games.
Yeah.
Well, Time Splitters is before that. So is Medal of Honor.
No, Time Splitters 2 was that generation.
That was on GameCube.
Yeah. That's the generation this is.
No, we're on Wii 360. We're on the Wii
generation. Oh. Oops. Okay.
So this is probably a 360 PS3 cross platform.
Yeah.
Haze.
You know, Battlefield 1943.
Haze isn't bad. 1943.
Yeah, but it's not World War II.
Yeah.
That was the Pacific.
Should we try to do...
The 1943 kind of gives it away.
Yeah.
We had a
franchise or...
It's still around, kind of.
I think it's like Quake. I think it's still kind of being around is like a really big hint.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mm-hmm. The way to narrow this down... We were just talking about a good way to do it, and I can't remember what it was, but all right, move on.
All right.
Realistic graphics. Is it critically acclaimed? That's what I wanted to do.
Moderately? I mean, it's not like an on-off switch, right? Like,
yeah.
There's sure. varying
that's
grades.
No, that's
yeah. moderately yeah. critically acclaimed.
So somebody here probably played it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe didn't flip their lid for it.
No, I'm trying
What's weird is that it's not an exclusive because a lot of the.
Yeah.
The Halos and the Resistances. And
is what you
like
would
that.
Think, yeah.
Yeah, no Halo, no Resistance. Good call.
Well, we're saying multi platform. Technically, the Halo games were re released on Xbox One.
Yeah, but Damon wouldn't do that.
Does this have contemporary guns in it?
Like guns.
Today's guns.
Today's guns.
Should we ask the setting then?
Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah. I feel like, is it a sci-fi game? Is like a clear way? Or like, is it set on Earth? Or I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. I just want to get to the setting of it.
Okay. Is it a sci-fi game?
Yes.
Okay. It's a sci-fi first-person shooter. That's weird. And it's still around, sort of.
I mean, we've been saying games that already fall into this. Prey.
Ooh.
That didn't have multiplayer, though, right?
No.
I don't remember. I don't think so.
Did Bioshock?
Bioshock 2 did, which was on those systems.
That's kind of around.
Yeah.
Is it a sci-fi game set on some version of Earth?
No.
Oh. Okay.
So that eliminates Prey. At least part of Prey.
Bioshock.
And that eliminates Bioshock.
Yeah.
What game?
It does not eliminate. What was the other one we just tossed out?
Haze.
No. We just said it. It was the one we said before. Fear.
Oh, Fear.
That's on Earth.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that one is.
Yeah, that and Condemned and stuff were all just like horror.
Oh, yeah.
When I said Fear, I was picturing Condemned.
Yeah,
I'm a dummy. And that's also that was made in Japan, I think. Well, Sega published it.
So there's these games with like a short title that were on. Like, well, first of all, Borderlands.
Yeah,
could that be? Well, that wasn't multiplayer.
No, it's co-op. Online multiplayer counts for
Borderlands is
co-op.
Absolutely. No, in so
we already did the realistic graphics.
Oh yeah.
Thank goodness we did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I thought that was a throwaway question, but it worked out.
At a time, it did have realistic.
Sorry, but around Borderlands, there's like games. Vanquish isn't one of them, but there's games with these short, silly titles that came out in sequence.
Maybe it's not
Link,
Black.
Or like.
Oh, yeah, they're Brink.
Oh, Brink? Brink. There is Black, but I think
Black's the generation before.
Yeah. It came to. Yeah.
It's never going to be Black.
No.
Brink. Like we mentioned Black a lot.
But that's not still around. Should we try to narrow publisher or developer?
Oh, that's really good. So it's not Japanese, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Is the developer still around? Does that even help?
No. Still around? Publisher would be more helpful, I think.
I still keep coming back to the franchise still sort of being around.
Yeah.
I don't know what that, because that eliminates, you know, it's not Haze, not Brink.
No. Yeah.
Does this game have a number 2 sequel?
No.
Oh,
so
interesting.
Nothing came out with this game number 2.
That's a really good question. So that eliminates any sort of like Quake weirdness or any of any, although that's obviously not sci-fi, but like any of that, like Unreal, you know, it eliminates any of those that we're not thinking about.
Sci-fi.
We're at 15.
Are we really? Wow. Man,
we might have said this game already.
It does not have a number 2 sequel?
No.
By the way, up until now, Destiny fit all of our criteria. Yeah. We're miles apart from that.
Yeah, true. What game were you thinking of?
Oh, I was just saying. I think we might have brushed past this game already.
Mm. I'm picturing games that are way too early in my head. It just dawned on me.
Mm. And then there's the PC stuff for Xbox 360, like Gears of War and stuff.
Is it
like that.
So? It's 360, Wii, PS3 generation,
multi-platform.
Yeah.
Though could that mean PC?
That's been completely tripping me up because I was not picturing games like Destiny. I was picturing game like old shooters. But it's 360.
Was era. Call of Duty did like
Black Ops?
But well, those have two. Are there anything
so
that
Modern
didn't
Warfare.
Have that?
The number
Modern
two,
Warfare
the
and
number
Black
two
Ops.
Sequels question was a really good.
Was there
question.
Like yeah. what was the last one?
Well, there's Advanced Warfare and Infinite Warfare, but I don't think Advanced
Ghosts.
Yeah, but that
those
was
are all kind of sci-fi,
and they're set on Earth.
Yeah, those are all set on Earth.
Oh, okay. So that was the
yeah. That rules out that. That rules out Medal of Honor. That rules out Battlefield.
Andres, you got one for us?
No.
It's very obscure. And this is only mildly critically acclaimed. Which is weird.
I mean, we have questions to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Damon, it does have online multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's still kind of around is tripping me up.
Yeah.
Should we ask about if you can drive vehicles in it or.
Yeah.
Because there'd be a Warhawk type game. No, that was
Starhawk.
Can you drive vehicles in it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Was it developed in America?
Part of it was.
What?
At least part of it was.
Ubisoft?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Ooh, would it be a Tom Clancy thing then?
Should we just ask if it's a Ubisoft game? Does that help?
Ubisoft, or my only other thought is some EA game with dice involved, because they would be...
EA
or Ubisoft. Battlefront? Like...
Battlefront had a 2. Twice.
Wow, what a MVP of a question.
Twice.
But wait, what about...
We'll call it your first person shooters.
What Ubisoft first person
That's
shooters?
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they only have Rainbow Six.
Yeah.
2K.
2K, EA.
Part of it was developed in America.
Yeah.
At least.
Or maybe all of it. Okay. I don't know. Was it a?
What about what's the ultra-violent game that they sent us Hamburger for? Bulletstorm.
Mm.
Oh,
I don't think any part of that. That was made by Poland. That was made by People Can Fly. But that's a good. I mean, and that didn't have multi. Well, it didn't have traditional deathmatch multiplayer. It did have multiplayer.
Yeah. Oh man.
It also was not.
And there's a semi-sequel for it.
I also
there's like a remakey remake for it.
Yeah.
And then there's Duke Nukem Forever also.
If that's the case. Damon led us astray with the American question because no part of Bulletstorm was made in America.
Are you trying to do the Larry David?
Yeah, I am trying to do the Larry David.
Wow.
But yeah, I feel like I'm running out of thinking.
Yeah, that, God.
Is that the kind of the funnier side of shooters, that just kind of bubblegum shooters, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a way to narrow it down.
This is one of those Burger King games.
Yeah. Jonathan, we lost hard on Sneak King a month or so ago.
Oh, no.
Stealth game.
Yeah. The only thing I could think to go from here would be publisher, but like I feel like Activision's ruled out because I can't think of anything besides
Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of weird EA shooters.
Yeah. There, unless there's some obscure random Ubisoft one.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong and Epic co-developed Bulletstorm or something. I'm trying to.
That
I'm
would be my only thing.
I'm trying to think of a way.
What else did Epic do?
Gears of War.
But Bulletstorm was multi-platform, is the idea.
Yes.
I thought so.
Bulletstorm was.
Are we sure? I played it on
I'm
Xbox.
Pretty sure it was.
I thought it was maybe only on Xbox. It even had that 3 red lights joke
in
it.
Oh, maybe it was.
What?
God, I thought it was.
Should we ask if this game had humor in it?
Yeah.
Like, I think Duke Nukem and that game both were a humorous game.
I agree.
Was this a humorous shooter?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm liking Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah.
I'm liking that maybe a little bit more than Bulletstorm.
Weird.
Did this game... revive, you know, long dormant, you know, franchise and give it a second shot at life.
No.
Oh!
All right.
I think it's Bulletstorm.
Bulls
there are only two fingers left.
Well, we'll go with that if we can't narrow it down even more.
Yeah, we only have two left.
What are games like these lighthearted, like Borderlands-y games?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think of like other things.
Was there a Doom or a Quake?
But those both had twos.
Yeah. No, there never ended up being another like Doom.
I think it's Bulletstorm. I think you got it.
It's not on Earth. I think it did have multiplayer that just didn't catch
it. It had multiplayer, but it didn't have multiplayer deathmatch. It had a weird mode where you were scoring points and trying to kick people into cactuses.
I remember that, yeah. We have one other question to burn. Mm-hmm.
What's a Bulletstorm like from that generation? I mean, it's probably that, not Bulletstorm, but I think it could be Bulletstorm.
Just especially humorous ones, there's not a lot that come to mind. Because Bulletstorm was like somewhat well-received. It was moderately critically received.
No, I like it. I like Bulletstorm a lot.
It is humorous. Does not take place on Earth as far as I know.
I don't know that that's a multi-platform game, but it got really, like the re-release came out on other platforms.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That one definitely
did. I
don't
know how, like, we'll need a rules lawyer to clarify for us. Let's do it.
All right.
Is it Bulletstorm?
We have another question, though.
Oh, so what?
All right. Fine. Yeah.
You guys are pulling the trigger on Bulletstorm?
Yeah.
You're right.
It's
Yes, co-developed by People Can Fly and Epic Games.
They did co-develop.
It was Cliff Bleszinski joined.
Right.
And released on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC in 2011.
I have a final question.
Yes.
Did you think we were going to get there?
I was worried.
Yeah.
But you're the one that honed in on Bulletstorm.
The number two question was really smart.
Yeah, they just did the HD remaster last year, less than a year ago. So that's why I said it's still kind of a thing. I'm sure they were exploring the waters.
A pretty good series of coincidences with our questioning.
Yeah. I mean,
plus the hat really helped.
Sometimes with 20 questions, I just get hosed. I'm like, well, I didn't play that game. I'm not going to but I played Bulletstorm. Like, I owned it and played it and liked it, but I just, my mind would, I don't know that I would have gotten there.
They sent us a packet of hamburger for that game with hair in it, raw hamburger. With hair in it and a dog tag and a bullet casing.
Why?
It's supposed to be the remains of a soldier, I guess.
That's not great.
Bulletstorm, 2011 was like the tail end. It still happens every once in a while now, but that was the tail end of the heyday of just weird PR mailings.
Hoping for Far Cry, because they've always sent us the weirdest stuff. We got that box to store prisoners in Vietnam.
We still have it.
Yeah. They crashed a hang glider out front of GameSpot down the street and scared the area. They thought there was a hang glider.
Was Homeland the one that released hundreds
of balloons in the bay?
Yeah.
And they had a Korean food truck at GDC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, North Korean themed.
Mm. Okay. Oh, so many good ones. EA published Bulletstorm.
Okay.
Published by EA. I always forget that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good. I like that game.
Not set on Earth, huh?
I like that game. Yeah, it's like you're on something like alien planet.
Yeah.
I don't know if you drive vehicles.
People off ledges a lot.
I don't know if you actually ever drive a vehicle in the game. I didn't remember.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's all on.
And I actually wasn't 100% sure that you don't wear a hat, but I didn't think the character you're playing as is supposed to be wearing a hat.
I'll be wearing a helmet. No one knows.
Is that a functional hat?
Nobody cares.
It's not like helmets, hats.
It's not like a crown that's functional, you know?
Functional. It dictates the, the royalty.
All right. All right. I'm going to go grab this magazine. Justin, you're going to say goodbye?
Is it just going to be these two?
Yeah, unless you're going to stick around.
No, I got to go, but I'm just saying you're going to leave.
No, I'm going to grab the magazine. We're going to run through it real quick in a few minutes, okay?
All right. Okay.
We'll be right back.
All right, this month we are looking through, it is the February 1992 issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly.
That's the month I was born.
The month you
month
were
and
born.
Year. Month and year I was born.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this will be a very special
that's really
issue
cool.
for you then.
Yeah.
You know, as you, I think every single episode we've been looking at since we started doing this from 1991 and 92, every single issue is obsessed with Street Fighter II. Street Fighter II is on the cover of this one. It's just a zoomed in picture that they took off of a television.
So much so that people were writing in last issue and saying, stop covering Street Fighter II, please. We're
that's
sick
amazing.
Of it.
Oh, you want us to stop? Here's a whole issue dedicated to Street Fighter II.
The next issue.
It's a great subtitle.
So, Jonathan, growing up as part of, as a Street Fighter II baby, this must have been all you talked about.
Oh, it was.
First words.
My first birthday was Street Fighter II specifically.
I'm going to read the letter from the editor here because it's all about,
Street Fighter II.
The state of gaming in early 1992. This is from Steve Harris, publisher, editor-in-chief of...
You're killing the spine in that collectible magazine.
It's okay. We have two other copies of this issue in our library.
As a reminder, this is from our EGM archives, and we briefly owned 1UP.com. They briefly were the internet version of EGM.com, so we have the library of EGM magazines.
Yep. So the letter from the editor reads, well, it's that time of year again. The silly season has died down. The Vegas CES is just around the corner.
Yes.
And it's a perfect time to gauge where we're going and where we've been. This year, more than any before, showed the greatest change in the electronic entertainment industry. Not only did we witness the introduction of new game machines like the Super NES, but other systems like the Sega Genesis finally came into their own. Prices on several formats came down, with the NEC TurboGrafx-16 finally reaching below $100. And don't forget the leaps in software production that mini machines like the Lynx and Game Gear made in 91. For all the truly incredible movement forward, however, the game industry has also started to experience some downscaling. The Nintendo 8-bit NES, long the staple of the gamer's diet, has been eclipsed by the more powerful 16-bitters, no matter what Nintendo says. The hobby is definitely becoming more upscale, which will have some negative effects in the short term, but should balance out over the long haul. 1991 saw a number of other events occur that will have a significant impact on the market as a whole in 1992. Although originating from a competitor, a tip of the hat goes to the first real television program to cover our hobby. The point isn't whether it's good or bad, but that it's on.
It sounds bad.
But that it's on at all is a testament to its creators and the gaming public.
What was it?
I don't know what he's talking about. He doesn't name the
Captain and the Game Master.
He doesn't name the show, but he's referring to some television show that was started by a competitor of EGM. I don't even know what it would be, though. So he says, aside from all the giant steps forward video gaming has made since its rebirth in 1985, even then they were acknowledging the rebirth. The question we have to ask ourselves is, where are we going to? The Winter Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas will likely be the place where the future balance of power within the video game industry will play itself out. Sega, coming off a banner year, will enter this show for the first time on top. Although Nintendo may claim superiority, the truth of the here and now is that Sega leveled their arch nemesis with a lower-priced left and a Sonic right. Being in the leading position will feel good to everyone at Sega, and they should enjoy it and work hard to continue their progress. Nintendo, however, cannot be counted out or even down for that matter. If Sega does not come up with some equally stunning softs to follow up Sonic, they will be eclipsed by Nintendo, whose legion of third-party producers will net us Street Fighter 2, Contra 3, and a plethora of other stunning titles throughout 1992.
Softs?
Yep.
Softs. All right.
Sure, quantity favors Sega, but with the knowledge of what Nintendo will produce in 92, the quality factor will tip to the big ends camp without further forward action from Sega. It's fascinating to me, like, because of books like Console Wars, we know exactly how that all played out.
Yeah.
How Sega was the underdog, and thanks to the incredible team at Sega of America, they were able to catch up with Nintendo and overcome them in the holiday season of 1991 when they lowered the price of the Sega Genesis and packed it with Sonic the Hedgehog. It's an incredible story, and then Sega of Japan effed it all up, and they lost their foothold, and they just tumbled down and down. Had a couple console release missteps, and now Sega today is, you know, not even a hardware competitor.
Yeah, that letter was just fascinating to hear read, because like the language used is so obsessed with the gaming industry as a technology and as like a consumer-fronted electronics thing, and like the way we talk about games now is so much more the artistry of it and the stories
that
we tell.
Accepted that this is a big part of popular culture now.
Yes, yeah.
And he's talking about like, man, games are being recognized by popular culture now.
Yeah,
that's a fight that's been won.
Yeah,
I think that's a really good point. And right across from that ad is an ad for Terminator. Right across from that letter is an ad for Terminator 2 in baseball.
Oh, no,
that was over here,
which was for NES. And Game Boy. And that is an interesting point he makes, where he's like, despite what Nintendo's saying, the NES is like out now. Like their new system is more important. Nintendo still does that, where they're like, oh, no, the 3DS will be around forever.
Yeah. Well, and
like,
that was,
what are you guys talking about? No.
The DS coming, the third pillar. The GBA will survive. The DS is just another part of it.
It's just part of their weird marketing cycle. And they were saying that about the NES and putting out tons of NES games throughout 1992, 93, 94.
Reviewed in this issue is Smash TV for the Super Nintendo. That got an Editor's Choice Gold Award. They like that one.
8989. That's a for Super Nintendo?
Yeah,
that's
for not Super a Nintendo. Great port. You don't think so? They thought it was a great port.
Hate that final boss.
They also reviewed Mega Man 4. That got an Editor's Choice Gold Award.
And there's another example.
Eights across the board. What?
Mega Man 4 came out that year. Well, he's like, the NES is dead, and he's right. And then Mega Man 4 came out, and then 5 and 6.
Two more Mega Man games came out for the NES after this one in 1992.
And the cover is Street Fighter 2. Like, this is a different generation. Like, it's just so funny how much those overlapped.
This is one of the little snippets for the Mega Man 4 review. Capcom definitely has a winner in the Mega Man series. After three titles, I would think that they would move on to the Super NES, but they took a bold step and created another great NES title. The worst problem with Mega Man 4 is that some of the weapons and bosses are recycled from the previous games.
Oh, interesting.
The bold step of continuing to develop after developing three games.
Well, it sounds like a cool soft to me.
Yeah. But yes.
They also reviewed The Empire Strikes Back for the NES. Ooh, didn't like that one as much. Got 5554 for that one.
That has a really cool Hoth level in it. That scrolls really nice.
Yeah, when you're riding the Tauntaun?
No. That's Super Star Wars. This is just Empire Strikes Back for NES, and it has like a really cool side-scrolling AT-AT level.
There's a Tauntaun right here in The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I know. I'm just talking about a different level. There's a cool Tauntaun.
You know, they have four people reviewing each game. Each one writes their own snippet. Mm. But the snippets are so often not helpful at all. Listen to this one. This is from the review of The Empire Strikes Back on NES. Take a moment to visualize this game. It never really takes the form of a high-action video game or rock-steady RPG. It gets buried somewhere in between and slows right down in the middle. While the graphics are excellent for 8-bit and the storyline is great, the gameplay leaves something to be desired. Fun! And he gave it a 4. So I don't know what...
Why is it fun?
I don't know if he was being, like, sarcastic, but also it just doesn't... Yeah. It doesn't work. It doesn't really come across.
Who was it?
And, that one was by...
Craig Harris.
Sushi X.
Sushi X, long time EGM writer.
Yeah. They review Rampart for the NES. the scores range from 4 to 8.
Oh, man.
That's why we don't average scores here.
Wizards and Warriors 3, I never played that one.
It's an RPG.
And they review Monster in My Pocket for the NES, Sam.
Heck yeah.
Which is a game that I know that you like. Oh, I like
all three of those games. Rampart is a pretty good port on the NES, too.
That's hard because it's a trackball game.
Yeah, but you just move around with the D-pad. It's fine.
This is a snippet from the Monster in My Pocket review. The name Monster in My Pocket is not the best choice. Even though the game is a little above average, it still is too easy for the serious player. The game is really about a 6, but they could have made it more interesting for a broader audience. Not much of a challenge for me, as I blew through it in no time. So he gave it a 5, but said it's really more of a 6 on Monster in My Pocket. Sure.
So Monster in My Pocket was, I remember the logo really well, but that was a series of toys and cartoon tie-ins.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds about right.
But not to be, there was a My Pet Monster cartoon.
I had no My Pet Monster.
And he had like green hair and like striped arms and like he had,
Now we go to Quarterman's gaming gossip section. Ooh. Let's see here. This is what was in the rumors this week.
Oh, Jonathan's been doing a gaming gossip section.
I know.
So he's our Quarterman.
I'm reviving it.
Jonathan Quarterman? All this time as
Was I really born in February 92?
They put you to work right away. Yeah. In previous issue, Sam, there was a preview for Contra 4 on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah. Probotector.
That's not a thing that exists. It was Contra 3 on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
So that we thought that was interesting at the time, and now they're correcting
themselves. But there were three Contra games on the NES. It's just one we don't care about. Force.
Well, there was Contra, Super C, and then Contra Force.
Yeah.
So that's why they thought the next Contra, that's why they're calling it Contra 4.
But they called it Contra 3, the Alien Wars.
The Quarterman says the incredible new Contra 4 for the Super NES is really not going to be Contra 4 at all. That's because Contra 4 is now Contra 3. Even though the release of Contra Force, it should be Contra 5. Oh, anyway, the subtitle on this one is Contra 3, Alien Wars.
Cool. Wow. And then there's Operation C for Game Boy. That's a pretty good one.
Operation C, yeah. Here's another rumor. He says, here's the rumor of the new year. Nintendo is rumored to be working on yet another Mario adventure.
What?
The specifics, remember this is February 92, the specifics
after Mario World.
Of this Mario title, however, are different since it will also mark the return of one of the little carpenter-type dude's oldest enemies, Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong.
A 16-bit update of the original Quarter Chomper, replete with new scenes and better graphics, is rumored to be on the way for release sometime in 92. Sounds like the type of game the Super NES was designed to make famous.
I love his need to use synonyms for Mario and Plumber. Like, he had to be like Quarter Chomper and
the
Carpenter
Red Bomber.
Man.
So there's
the
no
brown
Donkey
blur.
Until Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, that's what he's talking about.
That would have been 2 years later.
Well, was it 93?
94, I think, when that one was out, yeah.
But I think that's talking about Donkey Kong Country, right? I mean, it's got to be. It was in development for a long time.
This is an interesting thing. This is about, like, hardware. It says, EGM has learned that a new company, Multix Incorporated of Dallas, Texas, has just created a game card that plugs into any empty slots on any IBM computer. This game card allows one person to play Nintendo games on a TV while another person runs application programs on the computer. The game card performs the same functions as the NES, but the major difference is that the NES games will be on floppy disk. Multics will transfer the games to disk, thereby assuring that the copy will maintain the same high quality as the original cart. By being on floppy disk, Multics states that the games could sell in the $5 to $15 range. The Multics game card will cost about $90 and it will plug into any IBM computer. It will hold programs up to 2 megabits and can be upgraded to handle the new 4 megabit games. Multics is negotiating rights to use some of the older NES titles from companies such as Sony, ImageSoft, Acclaim, and Asmic. Isn't that crazy?
It's all madness.
And I tried looking this up. I couldn't find any information about the Multics.
We should hit up Steve Lin. He can track down a console for us.
The Multics game card. I couldn't find any information.
So the idea is that you use your parents' computer.
Yeah.
While they're using it to put an NES floppy disk in the side, which is just stolen. You're not going to buy it for $15.
I'm sure this company's pitch to Nintendo was, you know, the NES is reaching the end of its life. You can still sell games to people with computers to play the NES games on. So there's still going to be a revenue source to sell NES games to people with IBM computers.
Interesting.
But obviously never,
so strange.
It never shook out.
Yeah.
I had never heard of that before.
Me neither.
And I thought that was great.
Yeah.
A lot of these issues come with special advertising supplemental sections. It is the Neo Geo's turn in this issue. These are always very questionable. It's just like big hunk of this whole thing in the middle of the issue. It's like an advertising
tear it out.
Supplement. And very, very small text that says advertising supplement at the bottom there.
Neo Geo, bigger, better,
but better. All this copy in here in the Neo Geo section is written in the first person.
Hi.
And it's totally unclear who is writing it.
Is the Neo Geo writing it?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. It's
like we sent our trusty reporter to our ad department and he wrote
this. So it's like, first of all, it's not clear that this is an advertising paid for content. It's written in the first person and it sounds like this. One question that many people ask me is, will Neo Geo come out with a handheld? SNK will not release a portable system like Neo Geo Advanced Home Entertainment System. You see, when a video game company starts making handhelds, that means they have to split up the workforce. Instead of having the whole research and development staff working just on their home system and developing more games for it, some of the programmers have to develop handheld software. When our competitors release an 8-bit system, 16-bit system, CD-ROM, and a handheld, you have to write software for each system. It could get ugly. This is not the style of Neo Geo. Therefore, we will not release a handheld. And it goes on and on like that.
Well, wow. There's got to be a byline in the front.
No, there's no byline. No, Sam. There's no byline.
What about that dog? That bulldog in the front page.
No, it could be the bulldog, I suppose. Anyway, it's very...
Nothing in the rule book says a dog can't learn to write.
Yeah.
Finally, on page 104, there's Game Gear previews, and there's a preview of the game. They just call it Axe Battler, and there's 4 screenshots, and it says Axe Battler is an action and role-playing adventure in one. Sure looks a lot like Golden Axe in the action scenes. And yeah, the full title is, Axe Battler, The Legend of Golden Axe. It was a Golden Axe spinoff.
Oh, weird. Oh, maybe they branded it Golden Axe later.
Yeah, but so they have
four. Does that
four?
Say Bill Lambier's Combat Basketball?
It sure does. So they've got 4 screenshots to publish and share with their readers here. And then they have a little like description of the game, but they don't even know what they're looking at. They have no idea that Axe Battler, this game that's coming out, is a spinoff of Golden Axe.
Yeah.
They don't even know.
Axe Battler didn't know.
But it's clearly.
Maybe it started off made as, by a, Sega. As a, you know, a knockoff and then it got licensed.
Anyway. That's a little glimpse at the February 9th. This is what was going on while you were being born, Jonathan.
Yeah. What a wild time I missed.
Yeah. I always enjoy.
Well, I feel worse now. Like, it was a great winning 20 questions, but now I just want to know who Neo Geo was writing about.
Who was trying to hawk Neo Geo system.
The Game Lord speaks, so it says.
Yeah, but who's the Game Lord? That dog?
The Game Lord.
Yeah.
I solved it. Mystery solved. It's the Game Lord. This is the Game Lord.
Anyway.
I just wrapped. Let's go.
That is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Rest in peace. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Game Lord.
My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. We'll be right back.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.